Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. Happy Monday. It is April 23rd. Hope you had a nice weekend. Let me review the job description here. Be alert and interesting. Uh-oh. It's Monday. We've got a long week ahead. I hope it's going to be a good one. That's my prayer this morning for you. And as we're getting our day started, I just want to say we have Patrick Albanese coming up in just a few minutes. And then we're going to speak to Adam Carrington in the first hour. And then in the second hour, Dr. Bruce Ashford is going to be with us and Dr. David Aikman. That is today's lineup, and that is a stellar lineup. So one of the questions, one of the verses I'm going to have Patrick comment on this morning is one he sent me from Job chapter 6, verse 24. Teach me and I will be quiet. Show me where I have been wrong. I don't know if we do that anymore. So we're going to discuss that in just a minute. It is 5 minutes after the hour. We're looking forward to our conversation with Patrick. So let's take a short break and get him on.
What was the brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could...
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
It is 7 minutes after the hour. Patrick Albanese is the winner of the coveted award for excellence, recognized by me for taking my calls on Monday morning. Hello, Patrick.
Good morning. I did win the coveted award for coveting.
I don't know where you're going to go with that one, but good luck.
I'm the most covetous coveter.
All right. Let me just throw this out just to get things started. I don't know, memorabilia. What is with people and memorabilia? You can get a pair of Dorothy's Red Ruby shoes for $6 million. A collector who has the shoes for 18 years now, I was putting them up for sale. I mean, how many pairs of shoes did they have on the movie set? And how long did she wear them? And are they really for real? And you're going to fork over $6 million for a pair of shoes, really?
What do you do with those? You build a display in your house. These are the real Dorothy shoes. I mean, couldn't you? I'm not saying to people that you should lie. But couldn't you kind of like pick up a pair at the novelty store and say, no, I got the real ones. You know, I've seen all these movies where people have the fake Mona Lisa. You know, why not? Why?
Right.
$6 million. You know, I don't want to be just the do-gooder type of person. But I see that stuff and I go, okay, can't we use that money for something else? I'm not going to tell you how to spend your money. You're the bajillionaire that has $6 million for a pair of shoes that were worn in a movie, but gosh, we could feed some people.
I've been in your house and I've seen your velvet painting of Elvis, and you claim that's the original velvet painting of Elvis. I don't buy that for a minute, just so you know. I'm saying that publicly right now.
Well, and the proper terminology for it is Velvis. Velvet Elvis got a little bit too laborious to say. So it's Velvis, and if you look at the back, it was actually signed by the artist.
Nice. Well, my weekend was made possible by ibuprofen because I pulled up 1,200 square feet of old carpeting in my basement.
Wow. And the funny thing is your basement's only 300 square feet, so you had layers.
they kept carpeting over it, just keep putting it on. So it was a big job.
Yeah, you know, I know how difficult that is, and it was funny. I was just I had my church small group the other day, and they were telling one of the couples was telling this great story from years ago, where his wife was doing the stay at home mom thing while their kids were very young, and they were going to be remodeling one of the rooms, and one of it was the carpet had to come up, And very quietly, unbeknownst to him, while he had been at work for weeks, she would pull up sections of it, you know, scratch up the glue, get it all clean. Then she'd roll the carpet back down. He had no idea that she had been doing this. And so finally the day comes, he says, all right, I've got to tackle that carpet. That's it. It's time to start. He goes out there and it rolls up. Every day she just kept putting it back down. She'd scrape, she'd put it back down, scrape, put it back down. He had no idea.
Oh my.
What a great gift.
That is really, really sweet.
Yeah. I'll send her over to your place. Or is it too late?
It's too late. It's too late. Let's talk about Job chapter 6, verse 24. Teach me and I will be quiet. Show me where I have been wrong.
It's a little different these days, isn't it?
It is a little different.
I mean, now that we have social media, it's like, allow me to show you where you've been wrong.
Yeah.
I don't think it's allow me, but oh my goodness. You know, you think all the trials and tribulations and, you know, what is Job's request? All right. I'm willing to take some of the heat here. Exactly what have I done incorrectly that might have led to all of this? We don't do that anymore.
No, we don't.
We lack humility, don't we?
Yeah. And if you are going to say anything, you have to be careful on social media. Shania Twain, boy, she's getting a backlash from making she's Canadian, and she makes a remark that Donald Trump would have been the kind of person she could have supported. And now she's had a backlash against her, and she is backpedaling.
And they always backpedal, and there's multiple viewpoints on this. First off, her reason for voting for Donald Trump was, he might have said some things that were a little uncomfortable. But, of course, if you look at the Twitter reaction to Shania Twain, I don't think Donald Trump has ever said anything that compares to the stuff that people have said to her. Wishing death upon her, all because she said, I would have voted for him. And her reasoning was because we basically don't want to hear the truth. And when a guy comes out, even though he's crude, and he says, this is the real situation, and these are the real issues that we must deal with, instead of the sugar-coated things that politicians normally serve up. That was her only reason. Just saying, well, I don't know. I could have voted for the guy because it's time we heard the truth. I mean, we go into church and we hear the uncomfortable truth. It's very frequently the truth can be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all she was saying. And of course, she has to backpedal. And I think the thing that disturbs me about it is this. And so this is something that people on, let's just say, for lack of a better term, our side of the aisle have to learn how to do. We can't further the backlash on her for saying, oh, you shouldn't have apologized. Now we're going to boycott you. You shouldn't have caved to them. It's like, no, no, no. You must give her a safe haven. I really think that we have to say, look, I understand what happened to her. She voiced an opinion. It wasn't a popular opinion with those on the left. And so they tried to destroy her. They tried to make her – it's like, if you don't voice a popular opinion, zip your lip. We can't be like that too. We can't say, well, that's it. You caved. So now we're mad at you. We have to say, no, we understand what happened to you. You got bullied.
Mm-hmm.
You got bullied. You have a safe place with us. We understand what happens. It's hard to go against the grain. It's hard to go against – I don't even want to call it the popular opinion, but I will call it the vocal opinion, the people who are saying, that's it. Our goal now is to destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
You make us angry.
Yeah.
We can't be like that.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the conservative commentator Candace Owen, and Kanye West makes one comment kind of liking her style, and then he is vilified, and he's told that he's a black Donald Trump.
Right. And then they're saying, well, gee, there must be something. Maybe Donald Trump has some dirt on him. Oh, maybe he was spying on him, and it's like, and Kanye doesn't want to be destroyed. Candace Owens is a black female conservative. She's a red pilled, as they say, a reference to the Matrix movie where you take the red pill and you finally see the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And, a couple of years ago, she kind of woke up to this realization that we've been held back and we're not allowed to have any other opinion than what, the Democrat Party says, that you're not allowed to stray from this line of thinking, similar to what Shania Twain. You're an artist. You're not allowed to stray from this line of thinking. You must be on this side or we'll destroy you. And Candace Owens has spent the last couple of years, if people have taken a lot of shots at her, and all Kanye West said, all he said was, I like the way she thinks.
Mm-hmm.
I like the things, you know, she says some interesting things. That's it. That's his crime. And you go, wow. Yeah. It isn't like he even said, I agree with what she says. He just said, I like the way she thinks. You go, because he's probably Kanye West. I, you know, I'm no rap fan, but I'm not necessarily. All right. Yes. And if you're lucky, you play your cards right. I will not rap for you.
Yeah, please, no.
Because I do it with a banjo, and you know banjo rap. There's nothing like good old banjo rap.
Yep.
But you know, Kanye is just—he's kind of. He's a philosopher in his own right. He's written some pretty horrendous lyrics. However, he is trying to say to people, gosh, think for yourself. In fact, if you follow some of his Twitter stuff, and I don't, but it occasionally pops up in somebody else's timeline where they say, I don't normally agree with Kanye, but this is actually pretty clever. He says some things and you go, all right, I get it. This guy's kind of, you know, trying to put a message out to the black community as well. Don't just accept things at face value. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't like that this is our current modus operandi. Is that French?
I think it's French.
Yeah, I speak the Lithuanian. In case.
All right. Let me take a break, Patrick. When I come back, it was on this day in 1969, Sirhan was sentenced to death for the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. His sentence was later commuted to life in prison. Sirhan, you know who his favorite restaurant was?
No.
Pizza Pizza.
Oh, I thought he liked Shabu Shabu, but that's okay.
All right. When we come back, hopefully you're still on the line. And if not, it's been great talking to you. 16 minutes after there, I'll be right back. We are back. It's 19 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese, my Monday morning guest. Patrick, so you saw Les Mis over the weekend, didn't you?
I did. We took the kids to it. And as you know, it's a long show. It's almost 3 hours, but it takes a long time for everyone to die. It's a big cast. But I was kind of surprised. My kids really loved it. Surprisingly, my daughter was actually the more fidgety one. My son, who's only 7, kind of sat there pretty transfixed.
Wow.
So it was pretty spectacular, but it's funny. I'm looking at it as these, you know, as they build this barricade for those who know the story, you know, and they're fighting, and I'm going, now that was when they knew how to do a student protest. You know, these days it's kind of like, here's a cup of coffee over here and we got a couple of placards, you know.
Right.
These are professionally printed. You know, these guys just, you know, these kids grabbed guns and fought a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of caught my ear as, you know, they're going, well, there's just a bunch of students. I go, oh my, it's a student protest. Wow. I like the way we do it now. It's a little bit more gentle.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So very sad what happened over the weekend in Nashville with the shooting at the Waffle House. There was a... Yeah. I appreciate the guy who heroically went after the gunman and defused the situation. So he's dealing with the trauma of that and then the embarrassment of just having everyone in the world know you eat at the Waffle House at 3 a.m.
But that's usually when the food has some semblance of flavor, 3 a.m.
Right.
I actually used to love Waffle House, but if you've ever gone in during the day, it does feel a little unusual to be in there when there's sunlight coming in. It's just very, very unique. What an amazing story with this guy, too. So he's like, well, he's a guy, half naked, shooting people. Mm-hmm. He grabs the gun, wrestles it away from the guy. The gunman takes off. He burns his hand. He's cut up, goes home, cleans up, goes to church.
I know.
And then it comes out, it's like, what's with these cameras? Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, young man. People kind of look at you and go, that was really heroic what you did. And it was. You go, wow. You and I talk about this sometimes where we say, who makes these people? I'm not like that. I don't think I'm like that. I'd like to believe I'm like that. In my own head, when I create those fantasies of, you know, imagining a scenario going, well, I'd be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'd jump over that counter. It's like, no, I don't know if I would be that guy.
Yeah.
I'd like to think I'm that guy. So I think that's why we so enjoy seeing somebody that is that guy. You go, yes, that's how I want to be. I wish I could do that.
If we ever got cameos in movies, our lines would be, hey, you guys, let's get out of here.
Exactly. I think our lines would have been, who wants to go to the Waffle House at 3 a.m.? I'm going home. Yeah.
Well, the guy looked at the situation and said, all right, there's some badness going on in here. And if this guy is going to kill me, I'm going to make it hard for him to do it.
Unreal. I'll play the chicken card once again. You know, not to make light of it, but wow. You know, what makes somebody like that? Are they born that way? Is it their life experience that just makes them step up and take command of a situation like that? You know, I think we're going to find out some great things about this young man, and we'll probably in a couple of weeks say, of course.
Right.
Of course. We'll hear his story, and we'll say, well, of course he did that, because look at his story.
Mm-hmm. It's powerful. But the suspect is still on the loose. He's obviously now on the top 10 most wanted list. And so, well, I don't know when they're going to find him.
He had been arrested before.
Oh, did he get arrested?
No. But a year ago, he tried to get into the White House. And he was yanked from the White House. He had a bunch of weapons that the FBI or the Secret Service arrested him. The FBI, there they are again, took his weapons away. They gave his weapons to his dad and said, he cannot have these weapons. Dad gave the kid the weapons back. So, you know, you say, well, we should get rid of these weapons. You're going, his dad gave a mentally unstable person, I'm going to say he's mentally unstable, he was half naked shooting people at Waffle House. That mm-hmm. counts.
That qualifies.
Yeah, it qualifies. You know, like you say, I've never fired one of these weapons. I've never walked around in public half naked. And I've never eaten at a Waffle House at 3 o'clock in the morning. So mm-hmm. that's a combo. But you could, why your dad gave you the weapons back? They're saying that his father might be facing some charges. I go, yeah, I think that qualifies if, you know, the FBI or a law enforcement agency says your son had these. He can't have them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they give them back to dad, but. Hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think every day we have to get up and pray that God gives us patience and kindness and love. And I love this verse, Patrick, that you started with from Job chapter 6, 24. Teach me and I will be quiet. Show me where I have been wrong. It almost never happens that way as we go about our day.
No.
Tell me if you've had this situation before. You're parked at a red light. The person ahead of you is texting furiously, and the light turns green, and you wait about 5 seconds, and then you give a little little tap on the horn, just, hey, heads up. And instead of feeling sorry that she's not proceeding, he or she is not proceeding, you get mm-hmm. some obscene gesture of some kind.
Yes, a wave minus.
A wave.
It has happened to me. And, you know, let's say that I was the offending person. And let's say that I'm not texting, but occasionally you just don't notice that the light has turned green.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever reason, you're fidgeting with the radio. When I get that friendly tap on the horn, I kind of give the wave like, oh, thank you. I am so sorry to have inconvenienced you. Evidently, you know, 5 seconds, again, talk about the patience of Job.
Going back to my Job verse, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Can you imagine? Some, you know, back in the Bible says, and there was Job with all these troubles. And after 5 seconds, he said to God, why me? I don't think we talk about the patience of Job 2,000 some odd years later.
So I always, say to our listeners who are in the car driving, of course, be courteous and careful and listen to Faith Radio, but don't be grabbing your phone looking at stuff. Fair?
Well, and you know, if you're listening to Faith Radio, you don't need to change the station and you don't need to grab your phone. We're providing all the entertainment and information that you need.
That's a ringing endorsement.
In fact, I will, because I know we're probably getting near the end. I will end with a piece of instruction, a piece of information that everybody could use.
Okay,
it's actually an art form, something that through much trial and error, I finally have discovered the proper amount of time to put a coffee mug in the microwave to reheat the cup of coffee and have the handle facing outward when you open the door, so you don't have to fidget. See,
mm-hmm.
That's a minute and 13 seconds. Your microwave may vary, but I'm so excited that it's taken me about 2 years, and I discovered it this morning when reheating a cup of coffee. 1 minute, 13 seconds, open the door, the handle's facing out, no hassles.
Yeah, but so, how hot is the coffee?
Tepid, but that's but the nice thing about tepid is it's guzzleable.
Yes, should you can that guzzle work. Coffee at that time. All right, Patrick, I can't believe I have to say this, but I got to let you go right now because we have to carry on with the show. We've got Adam Carrington up next. We're looking forward to that. Always a pleasure to speaking to you first thing Monday. Thanks very much, and I'll talk to you after the show.
Sounds great. Bye.
Yep. 28 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Hope your weekend was good. Hope your day is starting off well. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting Faith Radio. Just love it. All right. We're going to take a break for news. And then Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College will be with us. Lots to discuss with Adam. Looking forward to that. Be back in a minute. Minutes until the top of the hour. Good morning. Taking ownership of your life is essential for success. Dr. John Townsend explains the need to invite others in as well.
It all comes back to Galatians 6, where Paul says, what a person sows, they will reap. And responsibility is just basically saying, I want to sow good things in life. I want to sow love and truth and work ethic and great relationships. And I should reap, you know, a reasonably happy life and all that. But people who don't believe in the law of sowing and reaping think, I need to reap really good stuff. I don't have to do anything about it. And what happens is they get passed over for love, work, jobs, everything, because the world works better when somebody says, and here's the phrase I always use with my clients, my life is my problem. My success in life, my failure in life, that's my problem. I'm going to want to have a lot of support and help and prayers and wisdom from my friends and God, but my life's really my problem. Those people are extremely successful.
If you want to hear that full interview from Dr. John Townsend, he's a leadership coach, a psychologist, and an author, you can find that at myfaithradio.com. You can type in his name, John Townsend, or type in overcoming entitlement. That would be the way to find that interview in its entirety. After a very short break, Dr. Adam Carrington is with us.
The Bible never explicitly says debt is forbidden, but it does issue a clear warning against its dangers. This is Jim Garlow. As a debtor nation, we become the servants to the nations from which we borrow, and our children and our grandchildren the slaves of those who own their financial notes. The biblical lesson is this. James 4:14 warns us that we don't know what will happen tomorrow. So being presumptuous on the future can have a devastating impact on us as a nation, as well as our families. No country has the authority to take money that people need to provide for their families, while the government, with stolen money, squanders it on useless and counterproductive activities. Wise investment is praised, as Jesus himself taught in the parable of the talents. But squandering wealth is never biblically promoted or encouraged. Be well-versed in this important issue at jimgarlow.com.
All right, 22 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College is my guest. He's now on our studio line awaiting. Hello, Adam.
Hello, hello. Well, I didn't want to interrupt you or Led Zeppelin.
No, I'm pausing for the same reason. And last weekend, Adam, here in the Twin Cities, 16 inches of snow. This weekend, 60 degrees. So it is now allegedly spring. I'm going to use the word allegedly a lot.
Right, right. We don't want to jinx anything. similar for us. I mean, we didn't get 16 inches of snow, but I was scraping ice off my car as late as this past Thursday, and we're supposed to get into the 60s today. So maybe the now is the winter of our discontent made glorious spring, we hope.
Is that Shakespeare?
Yes, that's Richard III, the opening to it.
Yeah, and you know, he died on this day in 1616, Shakespeare did.
That was partly why I was referencing it. I'm obviously a huge fan of the Bard, so
yeah.
That's a good for this to be one of the first days of spring is a good opening for that as well.
And pop quiz, Adam, how old was Shakespeare when he died?
Oh, that's a good question. I believe
I know the answer. Yeah, I do know the answer.
52?
Exactly. That's exactly
that
right. 52. Yeah.
Okay.
You're so smart, I can't stand it. Speaking of
I'm quite partial to him.
Okay.
I actually teach a class here, I think I've mentioned before, where I teach a bunch of his plays as from a political perspective. So I about drive my wife crazy with the Shakespeare stuff.
Yeah. When can we bring a piece of that into the show? I think our listeners would be fascinated to hear some of that.
Oh, I'd love to anytime. I think it's great to find genres beyond just political speeches or other things. Yeah, that you know, what is studying politics? I tell my students here, it's studying the nature of human beings and how they talk about justice and truth and live together in communities. And Shakespeare, among other works of literature, is great for that. You have kings battles and debates about who should rule and why and what justice is and where rule comes from. And so, no, I think those are great things. So I'd love to do a day on that if you would.
Yeah, I'm just so interested all of a sudden right now. Can you give me a little bit more of a movie trailer for what might be coming?
Sure. I think that depending upon the plays, if you look at Merchant of Venice, for example, you have a courtroom scene where what is the relationship between mercy, justice, and law? And should mercy be part of how law and justice is administered? If you look at Richard II, you have issues of, divine right of rule. If God works in the ways of men and rule, how is it? Does he just make a guy king, or are there other ways, and is there a way for a tyrant to be removed if God has placed him there? And then, you know, if we ever looked at King Lear, for example, there's this distinction between human nature and the conventions of human beings, the practices and traditions that we have, and how do we put those two together in order to make a just community, and what happens when those things become disordered? I could go on, but I think
that's so interesting.
Interesting, and they're entertaining. I mean, I don't want to turn them into just treatises. I love finishing the semester with The Tempest, because Prospero, the character there, is a sort of a teacher and a ruler at the same time, and he rules by teaching. And so I try to say that stories are a way to learn and to be taught and to enjoy while being taught. So that would be my pitch.
I love it, and I want to do that, and maybe we'll tackle that over the summer a little bit.
Yeah, I would love that if the listeners and you would be up for that.
I'll never
turn down a chance to do it. Yeah.
Oh, good. All right, let's talk about the Supreme Court. I found this very interesting. Justice Kagan was talking about and illustrating the way the law produces more unpredictability and arbitrariness than the due process clause tolerates. Now, that sentence alone is confusing to me. Maybe you can sort that out. But she's talking about the crime of violence, and there's disagreement over what the courts count as violent. Car burglary, evading arrest, residential trespass, unauthorized use of a vehicle, stalking, firearm possessions, are these crimes of violence? And I think the courts are a little mixed about that, aren't they?
Yeah, and this comes out of a case, and I'm glad you put it this way, because it's a case that came out this past week that I think was in many ways misunderstood by the media and others, where it was a 5-4 vote against the Trump administration, and the fifth vote was actually Gorsuch. And it was an immigration case for whether someone could be deported and why under statute. And the real question, though, wasn't really about the substance of immigration. You put your finger on it. The majority said that the way that the law was written was too vague, and it was too vague in describing what a possible violent action could be, because the law says that only if a violent action is being done, that is a reason why one can be deported. And I think what they were trying to get at is that in order to have the rule of law, the laws have to be clearly understandable. And what the majority was arguing, and I think this was a close call, but they were saying that the law wasn't clear on what was included under possible violent action. You were listing off the potentialities. Mm-hmm. And I thought the majority was trying to say, if we try to step into that vagueness, then there's two problems. One, people who are living day to day don't know what they're allowed and not allowed to do, or what the consequences would be. You know, do you know, if you don't know what the speed limit is, how is it fair for you to then get pulled over?
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, they said if the court steps in, it's a separation of powers problem, because if it's really vague, then the court basically has to impose its own will on the statute, meaning they basically legislate and write the statute for Congress. And so both on the realm of due process, individual rights, and on the realm of separation of powers, they said there was a problem both ways. Now, I don't know. I think it was a close call as to whether they were right about that, but I think the principle is a very serious one that we need to take into account.
Okay, Adam, let me take a break. When I come back, we'll continue my conversation with Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. In 14 minutes, we're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Minutes until the top of the hour. Glad you're with me this morning, speaking to Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. And Adam, Wednesday, the Supreme Court is going to hear the final oral argument on the travel ban. And I know the president has broad authority to restrict travelers from other countries into the U.S. if he believes that it's in the country's best interest to do so. So that's the topic. Who's going to be let in?
Right. And the constitutional question, and this will get a lot of attention on Wednesday. In fact, the court knows it'll get a lot of attention, so they're actually releasing the audio the same day of the oral argument, which is not unheard of, but abnormal. There's going to be two questions that's going to get asked about the travel ban. One, does it violate separation of powers by going beyond presidential power? And I've read the Ninth Circuit opinion that came from below that brought this to the Supreme Court, and I mean, without getting into all the details, I think it's a fairly weak reading of the statute that seems, I think, to give very, as you said, broad power and discretion to the executive branch to make these determinations, partly because they're the ones that are in charge of policing the borders and seeing who's coming in. The other, I think, is a little weak as well, which is that it violates the Establishment Clause, that it's sort of establishing a religion to make distinctions for who's coming in and who's not based on their religion. I think that's weak, A, because it's not a definitive evidence that that's the reason why these countries have been banned from sending people in, and two, I don't think that the Establishment Clause necessarily requires you to not take religion into account for immigrants coming in. I think once people are inside, once people are here, that's a different question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mike Pompeo went to North Korea over Easter, which seems like not a lot of fun on Easter Sunday. But he did make some progress. to the point where now Kim Jong-un and President Trump may sit down face to face. All right, question, Adam, is North Korea playing us, or is this could this be a President Trump foreign policy accomplishment?
That I hate to punt and say time will tell, mm-hmm. but I think there is reason to at least pay attention to this. Yes, in the past, North Korea has promised, they've verbally made concessions and then pulled the rug out from under us. And it very well could happen again. Some people are saying it will. However, I think what we'll have to see is, does this direct engagement with North Korea in a way that past administrations haven't, could that be a change in the relations between the two countries? I mean, the Kim Jong-un has made some what seem to be real concessions. He's no longer demanding to denuclearize. He's no longer demanding that U.S. troops leave South Korea or that the U.S. stop doing joint drills with South Korea. So I think I would not start giving Donald Trump the Nobel Peace Prize. However, if as this all develops, if it turns out that this is the beginning of a truly more stable and respecting North Korea, then I think it would be a great foreign policy accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Adam, how does James Comey write a book about his life at the FBI with an ongoing investigation happening?
Yeah, I think that there's quite this disconnect between the title of the book about honor and duty and the way that his book tour, or the very fact that he wrote a kind of tell-all book, plays out. You know, he seems to have tried to combine talking about dignity and honor with dishing salacious and trivial details.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that, like you said, that it's under investigation, there's still an investigation going on, is also sort of in poor taste and strikes of opportunism. And also just that he's trying to defend himself in sort of a groveling way. It made me think of, you know, in Proverbs 27, there's the statement, let another praise you, not your own mouth, a stranger, not your own lips. And he seems to have not heeded that advice. And I think it sort of degrades his own attempt to sort of stabilize and build up his own reputation.
Mm-hmm. Adam, I know you understand politics so well, and I think of the last Super Bowl where Tom Brady was beat and Philadelphia beat the New England Patriots. And if Brady went on the television two or three times a week lamenting why they lost and coming up with excuses for why they lost, we would turn our TVs off forever because we couldn't take it. How is it we can take it with Hillary Clinton? What's going on with that?
Well, it's that I think it's two things. I think on one hand, people who didn't want her to win enjoy watching her whine.
Right.
And I think on the other side, there are people who have just never accepted the legitimacy of the 2016 election. And I think even if we find the worst case scenario, which I doubt, that there was effective Russian meddling. I think everyone should really agree there was attempts to do so, but effective. And even if there was collusion with the Trump administration or the Trump campaign, which I doubt we'll find, even then, I don't think you can say that that destroyed the election or that that made it a foregone, you know, that swung it for President Trump. And I think that there are just people who refuse to accept that and are willing to watch her make, I think, increasingly what respect and dignity she has undermining claims. I think they're willing to let her do that. But I think, you know, the people with the smart money on the Democratic side have been wishing she would just go away, because I think this only does damage with anyone but the most hardcore supporters.
Mm-hmm. Just with a couple of minutes left, Adam, Barbara Bush certainly was a class act. And I was thinking about a discussion we had last week about a college professor from Fresno State that was actually said a fair amount of despicable things about the Bushes. And I'm just wondering, this level of incivility, when did this start happening in our country where it became so in our faces?
Yeah, there's this Onion article, a satire news site that just came out with a future article saying, politics wasn't this divisive or terrible in the 2010s, and it's by in the future where campaigns are decided by candidates trying to kill each other in a pit with guns and knives. I think that our political discourse has increasingly gone down since especially the 1990s, but I think especially the last decade, where I think two things have happened. I think politics has become much, much more personal, and I think the differences have become much, much more fundamental. I think there was a broader consensus and an ability to separate your ideas. You could be friends with someone who you disagreed with because you could find other common ground. I think now we have a bit of an all or nothing idea. And I think that has really helped to poison the well as far as the ability to have discourse about what I think are some fairly fundamental disagreements.
Mm-hmm. Adam, thanks so much for being on the show. Faith Radio and myself love you, so thank you so much.
Oh, it's great. I love being with you guys, and I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Adam. Have a great day.
You too.
Yep, 3 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up hour one. Hour two just ahead will be Dr. Bruce Ashford, Dr. David Aikman. It's going to be a good hour. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.